You are listening to the Health Hack Podcast, powered by Lumen and hosted by myself, Caroline Pierce. As an athlete, sports scientist, and sports presenter, I am passionate about health and how we can unlock the skills to hack our full potential. Each episode, I'll be joined by a leader in the health and well-being world to learn how they've come to understand their body and turned that knowledge into power that could help you too. Today, I have not one, but two very special guests. They are the ultimate power couple when it comes to all things sports science and nutrition. They are health product innovators, crusaders of bio-optimization and sustainability, and the founders of the company Complete Human, Jana Breslin and Evan DeMarco. Welcome to the Health Hack Podcast. How are you both doing?
Caroline, it's so good to see you.
That was the best intro ever.
It was.
Can we hire you to do our intro for a
power couple when it comes to all things sports science? But you guys really are, you know, you're doing so many incredible things, and I can't wait to get into all the nitty gritty of it. But let me just start with you, Jana, because I want to sort of introduce you both a bit more for people to get to know you. I know that, you know, as a fitness model, you've graced the covers of many different magazines, and you've gone on to be a CrossFit athlete, and, you know, all these amazing products you have within your company. But your journey started with sort of curing and documenting your own gut health issues and heavy metals in your body. And I always found that fascinating because I think it's something not a lot of people know much about. Can you share a bit about that?
Yeah, sure. Back in 2015, I started getting all these infections. I was on antibiotics like month after month after month, and I just really couldn't figure out what was going on. So I decided to go get some testing, and I saw a functional medicine doctor for the first time, and we did some testing, and it came back with a whole host of things that I had no idea what they were. You know, heavy metal toxicity, candida overgrowth, MTHFR mutations, leaky gut, 39 food intolerances. It was just like a laundry list of things where obviously my body was having a hard time just, you know, helping me out. And that was really challenging. So that, you know, going through that process, I did a lot of research. I was working as a pharmaceutical rep at the time, and I decided to basically dive headfirst into nutrition and lifestyle and just figuring out all the ways that I could help my body out. And that's kind of when I realized that once I was able to help myself and heal myself through these lifestyle choices and nutrition, I decided to dive headfirst into that and solely focus my career and my time into basically just learning more and expanding upon that message. So moved out of the pharmaceutical world and just went straight into, you know, nutrition, health, fitness, lifestyle, learning so many things to help optimize my system to get healthy again.
You know, it is so interesting because I remember when I first heard that, I thought to myself, well, what are heavy metals in my body? Do I have them? How do I test for them? Like, you know, if people are thinking to themselves, well, you know, I've got inflammation and all these issues, like where do you go to even get that information?
I know.
And what, you know, what is a heavy metal in our body?
Yeah.
Metallica.
Thanks, Evan. that is the thing, because, you know, a lot of doctors, I mean, if you're just a sick individual and you're trying to figure out how to help yourself and heal yourself, if you go into your traditional, you know, Western medicine doctor, they're not going to say, oh, let me go test you for food sensitivities or for heavy metals and stuff like that. So a lot of this was honestly research that I had to do on my own to really understand, okay, well, I'm getting all this testing done, I'm getting these results back, and on the surface or in traditional blood work, I look healthy, but there's still something wrong here. So what additional things do I need to do to uncover what's going on? So it really came down to me doing my own research and figuring out what other testing methods could I do, and then having to go and find doctors and people who will test me for those things, or, you know, companies will do it, you know, at home.
You know, we just have to put the time and effort into it, don't we? Because a lot of people might write it off and say, well, my blood work looks good, let's just move on with life, and I just kind of have to suffer this, or this is just normal for me now. And
yes,
I think it's important that we gain knowledge and we explore all these different options. And Evan, I know you are one of the brightest brains when it comes to all things sports science, and author and speaker worldwide, all these amazing things. But where did your passion, or what was your story in terms of what got you into this industry and wanting to share your knowledge the way that you do?
Yeah, that's a great question, Caroline. And I think my path began a long, long time ago. I just didn't realize it. My grandfather, my grand grandparents were really kind of the quintessential American dream couple. They met early on, got married, had a couple kids, started a couple businesses, you know, kind of all working towards that idea of this American retirement. They wanted to buy the Cadillac and drive across the country and see, you know, the world's largest frying pan and world's biggest ball of twine and all of the goofy stuff that we have here. But the two businesses that my grandfather started were a gas station and a painting company. And so speaking of heavy metals, this was at a time when lead gas and lead paint were the kind of standard. So realistically, he had so many heavy metal issues. And by the time that he was in his early 60s, heavy metal toxicity, lead poisoning were really starting to show signs in his life. And then he also got hit with Parkinson's disease, Alzheimer's, dementia. A lot of it really kind of driven by some of those lifestyles, the heavy metals, the lead gas, the lead paint. My grandmother was not willing to accept the doctors, you know, kind of, this is just how things are going to go. We're going to medicate the crap out of him. And so she became the ultimate original biohacker. She was like subscribing to newsletters for alternative physicians long before there was an internet. She was, you know, talking to all of these people about what she could do. And so my grandfather, like in his 60s and 70s, was doing things like chelation therapy or cold water immersion or like, you know, diet and lifestyle modifications. And my grandmother, when I was 15 and 16, she's like, are you taking your CoQ10 or are you, you know, you take your vitamin C? And I'm like,
so ahead of her time, gosh.
Yeah. And I'm like, grandma, I'm eating Taco Bell for lunch. It's so, you know, I always had the origins of that story in my life. And I never really appreciated it until much later when I left Wall Street and I started I purchased a sports nutrition company and I got back into the science. I went back to school and I started studying the biochemistry and the organic chemistry. And I recognized all the things that she was talking about when I was 15 and 16 were the things that were really the foundation for how we have to approach health and wellness now. It's not the traditional triage, let's put a Band-Aid on something. It's let's get to the root of all of our problems and recognize, like she said, we don't have to be sick and tired of being sick and tired. Like the goal here is to, you know, what is it? It's to die as late or die as old or whatever it is. It's like to die late as young as possible or something like that. Mm. Like basically we want to feel great as long as possible. We're not going to live forever, but we've instinctually or through society started to believe that you're going to ultimately just feel bad, right? That's age, the aches, the creaks, you know, that's not the case. We can live young as long as possible.
My dad always says that. He has all these ailments and he just says, well, I'm just old. It's just what happens. I'm old. And I'm like, well, it doesn't have to be that way. And both of your stories are the result with your family, Evan and Jana, your own situation is reacting to something, isn't it? Once you've already got that kind of problem. And I think more of what we all talk about now is not reacting, but doing things to prevent the problems in the first place. And that's what we're sort of trying to promote. And I'll take us back to, I think it was 2018, where we all sort of officially met in Costa Rica at the XPT experience with Laird Hamilton, the famous surfer, and his partner, Gabby Reese, another power couple in themselves. And in this experience, it was only a few days, but we did everything, didn't we? From breath work to cold water immersion and surfing with Laird Hamilton and all this education. And I know it had quite an impact on me. I came away from that trip really thinking differently about how to be better, be healthier. And I know for both of you that it led to both a partnership together in life and your business, Complete Human, that we can see behind there as well. How was that experience for you and how did that all come about in terms of what you do today with Complete Human? So I want to ask you more about that as well.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know, like Evan and I always just kind of, we just agreed on a lot of things. We had a lot of the same thought processes and methodologies and we just believed in a lot of the same stuff. And so I think going to XPT, and I agree with you, Caroline, that's something that I still think about all the time. I love that event. It was fantastic. And it spawned a lot of amazing friendships and relationships and just, you know, future endeavors, which has been amazing. But yeah, like it really brought Evan and I together. And we just realized that this is so important. We have to spread the message of health and we have to do everything that we can to elevate this and make it accessible to everyone. So that really spawned kind of our business relationship and how we do the things that we do together. And it's been a wild ride, that's for sure. We've gotten involved in a lot of different things.
I was gonna say XPT was amazing. I left Costa Rica more exhausted than I think I've ever been in my entire life. Like lifting weights underwater.
It's not a vacation.
It was not a vacation. And I think a big part of that too was, you know, we were doing all of these incredible bio optimization things, and especially the hot water or the cold water, the heat. But I think one of the things that really drove my exhaustion was that at the end of the day, everybody's so exhausted. So they went to bed at like 9 o'clock, and then Jen and I would shut down the bar. So it's like 11 o'clock at night. We're still drinking at a health event.
I remember leaving you both at the bar many times, and we're all going to bed exhausted. You're still sort of chatting away about all things, everything, you know, health, yeah, wellness, the world.
All of it.
It was a blast, but it really did show that, especially for someone like Laird Hamilton, who was 55 at the time, wanting to surf 80-foot waves, that we do not have to go gentle into that good night. There are things that we can do day in and day out, and as long as we're willing to put ourselves, you know, in a little bit of an uncomfortable situation, we can start to thrive in an environment where we thought we just had to accept the ravages of time. Mm-hmm. And that, yeah, led to, you know, us kind of doing a lot of the things that we do now.
Yeah. So what is complete human in a nutshell? And where does that name come from for your business?
It's really a journey, right? I mean, it's not like a complete human is this. It really is a journey. We have four pillars, which is spiritual abundance, physical health, mental fortitude, and planetary connection. And we believe that these are the pillars that it would be great if most people followed them, because it would aid in their journey of becoming a complete human. It's not like, and it's never something that's reachable, right? Like it's always, you're always striving for more. And that's just something that we believe and we love.
Yeah.
And you talk about bio-optimization. And so the sort of average person listening at home, they might say, well, what is bio-optimization and how do I achieve it? So to begin with, what is it? How would you describe it?
You know, I grew up in this world, or I kind of came up in this world where everybody was talking about biohacking. And I hated the word. I mean, like, when has hacking ever been a good thing, right? Like, nobody calls you up. You don't get a call from your friend saying, hey, I just got hacked. And it was a good thing. So hacking, by its definition, is to get a system to do something it wasn't designed to do. Whereas optimization was really an idea of making small corrections day after day that lead to big changes in your life. So we wanted to reframe the vernacular and recognize that there is no shortcut to better health. There's no, like, one pill is going to fix everything. Bio-optimization is really just doing those same things, those small corrections day after day to lead to a bigger result, but it's also based off of diagnostic data. And one of the things that I've always had a hard time with in this market, and especially in the world of commerce, is that someone, you know, gets a small degree of notoriety and they're like, well, this is what you should do. And like, no, absolutely not. The only thing that you should do is what the diagnostic data says that you should do. There's no reason that you should be taking, you know, supplemental vitamins or eating a specific diet if you don't know that that's good for you. And so the N of one within the complete human journey is the most powerful number there is. Your data will dictate what it is that you need to do. So when we look at microbiome, when we look at, you know, metabolic disease, when we look at all of the different data points that we can bring together, we can ultimately craft this path towards optimal health and wellness.
So how do we measure those things? How does someone like myself or anybody else, how bio-optimized am I? What's the process?
Great question, right? Everything begins and ends with blood work. You know, where are, you know, yeah, micronutrients, but then we get into, you know, lipids, we get into, you know, cholesterol, vitamin D, you know, all of the things that we need to know. So there's this template of what a healthy human being is. And if we start with blood work, we can start to recognize, do I exist within that template? Or, you know, are my vitamin D levels so low that I've got a problem? Or conversely, with COVID, are my vitamin D levels so high because everybody said, well, take a lot of vitamin D, you won't get, you know, really bad COVID. Well, how many people are now hypercalcemic because they were taking so much vitamin D and they never tested it? Like, I'm taking, you know, 20,000 IU a day and wondering why my bones are so brittle because of that hypercalcemia. And again, that's an extreme case.
I was going to say, how much would you need to take for? Because probably a lot of people think, well, hang on, I upped my vitamin D substantially during the pandemic. You know, what's that upper limit? Because I'd not heard of that.
Well, and again, the upper limit is going to be based off of each mm-hmm. person, right? Jan is a perfect, she was taking a ton of it and her levels were still low. And this is taking a ton of it, being outside, naked. Can I say that?
All the time.
All the time. So you'd think that her levels would be...
Get that vitamin D in however you can, of course.
Everywhere, every crevice.
My vitamin D levels have always been really high, but conversely, I don't take it as much as she did. Now, a lot of that is going to be just genetics, right? Like I'm more Italian. I'm from a different region of Europe. You might, just because you're, you know, very, very blonde and, you know, fair skinned, you might have a hard time getting to those upper limits. So then what are some things that you can do within specific diet and supplementation to increase those vitamin D levels? And all of that is just based off of where you're at, right? You have to understand what your starting point is before you can evolve to that next level. So you know, you start with that. Then all of a sudden we need to get in, or the next step is to get into your microbiome. What foods can you eat that will really start to impact your ultimate health? And the only way we're going to do that is microbiome. A lot of food sensitivities or food sensitivity tests are based off of leaky gut. So if we know that we've got a leaky gut and we take a food sensitivity test, that's not necessarily going to be indicative of what we can't eat. It's going to be indicative of what actually permeated our gut lining and is now showing up in our bloodstream. So leaky gut tests or food intolerance tests really are just an extension of leaky gut. So if we get into the microbiome, we can start to optimize the gut health a lot better. And then I think beyond that, then we start to really look at like omega-6 to omega-3 ratios. That's a big one.
CRP,
yeah. Our levels of inflammation.
What's CRP?
C-reactive protein. And C-reactive protein is going to be one of those markers that's an indication of your level of inflammation.
Okay.
If inflammation...
Which is so important with disease and everything.
Absolutely.
All about our inflammation. Yeah.
Yeah. One of the things that I'm really focused on is the omega-6 to the omega-3 ratio. If we go back in time 150 years, the average person had about a 4-to-1. And that level of omega-6 to omega-3 was really in homeostasis. It was really kind of in that sweet spot for us. But once the Industrial Revolution took place and we started, you know, feeding cows corn and soybeans and we started eating all of these seed oils, that level went from 4-to-1 to 25-to-1, oftentimes here in the US. And that is so pro-inflammatory. So when we talk about inflammation being the root cause of all disease, one of the things that we have to look at first is to really optimize that omega-6 to omega-3 ratio. That's diet, that's lifestyle, that's exercise. But more importantly, it's eliminating a lot of the things that have caused that standard American diet downfall.
So what foods would we eliminate to lower the omega-6 part of that ratio? Like nuts, for example, which are high in
nuts,
omega-6, or does it go beyond that?
It goes way beyond that. A lot of it's going to be the oils, you know, your corn oil, your...
Like seed oils.
Seed oils. That's the big one. And you know, then it gets into all of the things that you shouldn't be eating that are made with those oils, right? Like potato chips. And I don't care if they're organic, they're still potato chips.
Yeah.
Like getting back to a basics diet, you know, good quality grass-fed, grass-finished meat, certain types of vegetables, ones that don't have kind of an inflammatory response. That's the core. And then once you have that as a core, then you can start to add certain things based off of how your unique microbiome works. But that's the basis. It's, you know, back to basics, good quality meat, good quality vegetables, fruit. Obviously, I'm a big fan of fruit. We like the sugar in that way, not in the Snickers bar.
Yes. Yeah. Healthy fats too.
And that kind of leads me to ask about your new venture, Regenerative Pastures, which is all about that, isn't it? Getting rid of the imported meats and, you know, all the artificial ingredients and preservatives that we eat within our food. Talk to me about that and how this project came about and what it is, because it's making a difference, you know, in terms of sustainability and our health.
Well, it's definitely an adventure. I mean, this is something that, you know, a year ago, Evan and I did not know anything about the term regenerative agriculture, or, you know, we don't have like a farming or ranching background. This is extremely different for us to be involved in. But we see a direct relationship between this industry and not only the health of people, but the health of the planet too. So when we saw that there's an opportunity to get involved and help elevate this message, we said we had to. A friend of ours came to us and he was like, "Hey, you guys should do a podcast or a documentary on regenerative agriculture." And we're like, "What is that? We don't even know what that is. Like, send over some information so we can read it." And so we did. And like, honestly, Caroline, we read it and we're like, we don't want to just tell this story, but we want to get involved. Like, we want to be a part of this solution. We want to help spread this as much as possible. And it literally has led us to doing things that we didn't think we were going to, like owning a processing facility in Cody, Wyoming, and starting a direct-to-consumer meat company. It's like, it's just not something that we ever thought we'd get involved with.
No. And I think to take a step back, I grew up in a small town of Greeley, Colorado, which was one of the largest feedlots in the United States. So I grew up 5 miles from a 10,000 cows where on a good day, you could smell it. On a bad day, you shut the windows and hope that the air conditioning can kind of filter that out. So along the way, I never gravitated towards being a vegan, but I also understood when people would make these claims about how detrimental cows were for the environment, I could see firsthand, yeah, that makes sense. So when this idea of regenerative agriculture and that how cows or bison or ruminant animals were the solution to climate change, I was as skeptical as anybody. I'm like, no, that's not true. I grew up next to 10,000 cows. There's nothing good about that. But when we recognize that man has always been the architect of our own demise, we're the ones that are directly responsible, not for ruminant animals destroying the planet, but by putting all these ruminant animals into one spot and letting them sit there for year after year after year. When we go back in time again and we recognize animals are just naturally migratory, right? Like we get these bison, cows, whatever, they'd get together in these herds and they would move through an area eating, peeing, pooping, and going quickly to avoid predatory animals. That holistic nature of the way that they move through the land was the thing that really is the most important for soil regeneration. And soil is the essence of everything that exists on this planet, right? Without healthy soil, we have nothing. We don't have vegetables. We don't have crops. We don't have animals. We don't have carbon sequestration. Like, soil is the essence of our future on this planet. And we've done a really good job of eroding and degrading soil to the point that within 100 years, we might not have a livable planet. And so when we start to hear numbers like that, it's like, well, no, that can't be right. But the data actually suggests that we are rapidly marching towards our own demise. Ruminant animals, regenerative agriculture is really the only viable solution. And again, I mean, Complete Human was the essence of educating, inspiring healthier people for a healthier planet. We were getting on podcasts and talking about plastic straws. Like, yeah, that's all well and good. Yeah. But that means nothing when we don't have oxygen. That means nothing when we don't have food. So our last best hope, based off of all of the available science to reverse climate change and to provide healthy, nutrient-dense food for the planet, is regenerative agriculture. Yeah. So it was the only thing that we could do was, we're not just going to tell the story, we're going to do it. So yeah, as Jana said, we bought a USDA-certified meat processing facility. Now we're farmers and ranchers.
That is also fascinating. You're not only the work that you're doing for the planet, but for people's health as well. And I think within our body, all the foods that we buy in a supermarket now are so highly diminished in nutrients from what they used to be. So even to just eat healthy foods now, you know, what seems healthy foods, natural foods, real foods, doesn't seem enough anymore. Mm-hmm. It's almost like we now have to go local. We now have to, you know, the meat that you're selling and making available. And it is so interesting. How would you describe each of your individual diets? Obviously, you're eating your regenerative pasture meats and the real foods, but I think you also intermittent fasting you talked about as well. So you're both in incredible shape, and that's why, you know, people that are listening to this and not watching it, how does a day of eating look for both of you?
Well, I honestly just try and keep it as clean as possible. We travel a lot, so we have ample opportunity to kind of have other fun foods sometimes. And that's still important for us. Like, we still like burgers and fries, and we like to have a cocktail every now and then. And we like having that balance. But for me, especially when I kind of think about it, like when I'm at home, I just keep it as clean and as whole as possible. And it really just comes down to, for me, one ingredient foods. If it has a package and a label and a list of ingredients, that's something that I try and avoid. I just try and keep it very, very simple. I eat a lot of protein, lots of fruit. I have healthy fats, potatoes, some vegetables at times. I'm actually doing some experimenting with vegetables. I've heard a lot of conflicting information about how there's plant toxins and these defense chemicals that plants have. And I always like to use myself as a guinea pig and try new things. You know, I've done keto, I've done vegan, I've done paleo, I've done so many different diets and stuff, not because I'm trying to find something to help me reach my goals. It's more out of just curiosity. And I get a lot of questions on my social media is like, what's the best diet? And it really is. It's just different for each person. But I honestly just keep it as whole as possible.
So when do you start eating in the day? What's your first meal?
I intermittent fast sometimes, but I don't keep an extremely strict hourly schedule. Yeah. It's kind of just like, oh, well, I've got a busy day and right now makes sense to eat. So I'm just going to eat it now, even if it's like 8 a.m. Yeah. or if it's like 11. Yeah. Sometimes it just kind of depends somewhere in there.
Yeah.
Yeah. But I normally go at least 12 hours between meals, you know, as far as dinner to breakfast, at least 12 hours.
That makes sense. And, you know, we've pointed out already like the individuality of how we should eat and what supplements we should take. And that's why how you eat isn't necessarily how someone else might eat. Does your diet look very different, Evan?
Oh, completely.
Yeah.
Yeah. I'm on the all Twinkie diet.
You're not.
I eat a lot more sugar than I should. I eat a lot more processed. When I say processed, I love a turkey and cheese sandwich for lunch. Mm-hmm. I definitely don't eat as clean as her. And I think that, you know, when you look at us both with our shirts off, you can tell that hers clearly is the better way to go. It's interesting.
At least you know what the right choices are. You just choose not to make them sometimes.
Well, that's the hardest part, isn't it? A lot of us know. It's just actually deciding to follow it. But no, I know you're looking good shape. I know you're looking good shape.
And that actually is right. Like most people know that eating, you know, potato chips are not healthy, but these are chemically engineered to make them addictive, right? Like food scientists spend all of this time in a lab to make food that's ridiculously cheap to make, but also hyper addictive. And so, when people talk about, well, just eat this way, it's not always that easy for the average person to switch 20, 30, 40 years worth of eating habits and all of a sudden just eat, you know, single ingredient foods like Jana has done a really good job of. And her willpower is amazing. Her health issues kind of drove that need. But for the average person, it's pretty difficult. And so, you know, when we talk about diet, a lot of the times I talk about forgiveness and the concept of it's okay. Like, you know, get to that point where you at least you understand what's healthy and then start to make the small corrections. Don't anticipate that you're going to throw out everything that you've eaten for 30 years from your cabinet and start eating nothing but, you know, turkey and broccoli for the next, you know.
It's not sustainable.
It's not sustainable. And we have to be able to, you know, be more metabolically flexible. One of the things that happened in Costa Rica was I talked about that. And metabolically flexible, in my definition, is this ability to switch very, very easily between burning carbohydrates when you're, you know, active and burning fat when you're at rest. And if we follow certain dietary tenets, that we can get to that point pretty easily without kind of going completely, you know, utilitarian and eating nothing but, you know, cardboard.
Not very appealing. I'm glad you brought up metabolic flexibility because our sponsor of the Health Hack podcast is Lumen, the metabolic tracker that we've talked about, and you've got one heading your way. I can't wait for you to try it. And you said that, Evan, as well, you've been looking into this for a while and you were fascinated by this idea that we can measure our metabolism and make individual informed choices as a result.
I love that because I think, you know, long before metabolic health became a talking point, I've been screaming about this for, you know, 10 years. It's like, this is the holy grail, right? It's all about our metabolism. And when we recognize that mitochondrial function is part of that, basically how we eat, how we process foods are all part of metabolic health. You know, when I spoke to you guys, you know, all those years ago in Costa Rica, one of the things I said is there's not really a single solitary test that you can take, but now there is. And we recognize the importance of metabolic health. So to be able to have a Lumen and say, okay, this is what I need to do, it gives us those additional data points from which we can bio-optimize.
Yeah, mm-hmm. It's so interesting. And I've heard you talk as well about beating up diets and fat adaptation. What does that mean? What's beating up a diet and this idea of fat adaptation?
I hate keto. Like, you know, diet is a four-letter word, and we need to recognize that. And I get so frustrated with the market's adoption of stupid things that are just marketing, like Whole30 approved. What in the holy hell does that mean? Like, I've seen that on water. Like, of course water should be Whole30 approved. It's life approved. When we remove the economic drivers behind certain things, we get to a point where diets are just that. They're ways for people to make money. Keto as a lifestyle, not good. Fat adaptation is. And what happens is that we just kind of need to metabolically reset every now and then. So if we're starting to notice that we're not as metabolically flexible, we're having a hard time keeping off weight, we're exercising more, but things aren't changing, we get really tired after we eat a meal, those could be all small indications that our metabolic health is just kind of a little out of whack. So one of the things that we can do is, you know, a week of fat adaptation, go really high fat, completely low carb and medium protein. And then once we start to balance out those ratios within our body, then we can start to effectively add carbohydrates back in based off of our activity level. So a fat adaptation cycle is nothing more than getting your body used to burning fat as a fuel source before you introduce carbohydrates for activity.
So how often would you do that? How many weeks of a month or during the year?
I think a good, you know, depending on kind of your performance level and where you're at in your activity level, I think a good fat adaptation week quarterly is a good way to do. So okay. 4 times a year, take that week, cut out as many carbohydrates as you can, you know, eat a more high fat, good quality fats diet. That doesn't mean that you're eating lard out of a bucket. Yeah. and eat that for a week and then really start to kind of reintroduce your carbohydrates. And again, healthy carbohydrates.
No, that makes complete sense. I haven't tried that. That's something I'd be interested to try as well. And obviously not just nutrition impacts our metabolism, our training as well. And Gianni, you took that journey into CrossFit and this functional training concept that I know you adhere to. And what was the difference in your body and how you responded as a result of changing up your training the way you did? What, a few years ago now? What was it, like 3 or 4 years ago?
Yeah, well, I started off in the bodybuilding industry. And that's, you know, they're both rough on the body, right? Bodybuilding and CrossFit. It's not, neither of them can, you know, I think CrossFit's probably healthier as far as mentally, but bodybuilding, not so much. But as far as like functional training, when I switched more of my focus from how do I look in the mirror? How do I look compared to another woman on stage? It's like, that's not how we're supposed to live. We're not supposed to live and go about our life thinking about everything that we eat and everything that we do based off of how we look. And that's kind of the path that I was falling into. So when I found more functional fitness and started doing CrossFit a couple times a week, it was life-changing for me because it allowed me a place to strive for being better and reaching PRs and getting stronger. So instead of, oh, I lost this much, you know, body fat percentage, it was, no, I gained this much, I added this much more on my squat or something like that. And that was something that was really, really awesome. Especially someone like myself who was very, I don't know, the bodybuilding industry, it's easy to get sucked into it and kind of more obsessive about the numbers that, you know, like your macros and your, you know, what your body weight is and all that. And so moving into something that was much more positive influence on the outlook on my mental health, on my physical health, I really, really enjoyed it. And I thought it was a great transition for myself. And nothing against bodybuilding.
No, but of course, they're completely different ways of training. But as a result of not focusing on the aesthetics and how you looked, did you find you looked better anyway?
Yes, I believe so. More, I don't know. I'm not sure what it was. I also just feel like I felt more proud of myself because it's like you're going into the gym to put in hard work, to do hard work, not to burn off the, you know, the turkey and broccoli that you just ate, right? It's like I don't know. It's less stressful mentally for me to do more functional fitness because of that. And in turn, I think I was happier, which means I'm sleeping better and you look better when you sleep better and eat better and train better. It was a very positive domino effect.
It all comes together, doesn't it? And we talk a lot about nutrition and we talk about fitness when it comes to our metabolism and our body. But one thing that's clear is our mind drives all of that. And, you know, Evan, you said Jana's got a good willpower when it comes to the way she eats and the choices that you make. You've got this sort of inquisitive mind, haven't you, as to how you go about things. And I know you both talk about this mental fortitude idea a lot as well. And it's does it come from Tony Robbins, or it's something that he talks about a lot as well, doesn't he? But what is mental fortitude and how does that govern all of these factors and facets that we've talked about?
Great question, Caroline. You know, we've always kind of, it did not come from Tony Robbins, although, you know, realistically in this space, there's all of this. Most of us have kind of zeroed in on the same things. You know, when you really want to improve all of the, you know, all of your outcomes, both physical and mental, there's just certain things that we see successful people doing. We always use kind of the New Year's resolution as the benchmark for understanding this, right? So go to the gym on January 2nd and it's packed. You can't get on a machine. It's a bunch of people in jeans and flip-flops working out. And God, I love the fact that there's that initiative to change things. But fast forward 30 days or 60 days, and most of those people aren't there anymore. So what stopped them from going from this point that said, I need to get healthier, I know that exercise is part of that, to I'm just going to fall back into my own habits? And most of that is mental fortitude. It's that internal monologue that says, I'm better off sitting on my couch. I'm okay sitting on my couch. I'm okay not doing the things that I need to do. Mental fortitude is really embracing the suck. It's that going, yeah, I'd love to look like Jana and sit on my couch and do nothing, but you don't look like this in that. And so mental fortitude is simply that recognition that if we put ourselves through hard things, positive, you know, a positive thing comes out of that.
Yeah. That makes sense. And I think we live in this society where we want quick fixes. We, you know, this Instagram world where everything's instant gratification and very, you want things to be quick and fast and immediate. And it doesn't work that way, does it? You have got to put in the work, but putting in the work doesn't have to mean unpleasant, not fun, not satisfying in any way, shape, and form. And I guess sort of one of the final sort of takeaways that is, what maybe three or four things can we do in our life? What changes can we make in order to be healthier, fitter, and happier? If you were to take something away from this, what are the ones that you talk about or that stand out to you?
So many things come to mind. I think a huge part of it is honestly who you surround yourself with. I mean, yes, it's like the certain things that you do on a daily basis, but if you're constantly surrounded by and putting yourself around individuals who are negative or not supportive of your goals, or you want to find your tribe. You want to find your people that are encouraging of your path. And so I think that's a huge component. Sleep. We talk so much about sleep. It's so important for so many things. I don't know. Do you have, what else would you add?
You know, one of the things that I've always talked about are that there are three principles to changing your trajectory. The first one is, how hard are you willing to work? If we think about it in the context of health, what are you willing to do every single day? Are you willing to wake up and go to the gym? Are you willing to, you know, are you willing to put in that effort? The second thing is, what are you willing to sacrifice? And that's the one thing that most people don't think about is there's work, but then there's sacrifice. I could go to the gym all I want, but if I go home and eat beer and, you know, pizza, the end result isn't going to get there, or I'm not going to achieve that end result. And the third thing is the people that you're willing to keep close. You know, when you put those three things together, hard work, sacrifice, and a tribe, you actually put together this model for success. That's always been my big thing, right? Like, I know that if I'm not feeling great, I need to contact those people that are going to inspire me and motivate me. It's like, hey, let's go for a bike ride. Let's go work out. Let's go do something outside. Let's not just go to a bar and drink beer and watch football. And there's a place for that because we need those outlets. Yeah. But in this quest for optimal health, we need to prioritize the things that drive health. And while the mental side of checking out for a day and drinking beer and watching football is great, that's the outlier. That's not the everyday.
Yeah, I love that. And I think we do talk about sleep a lot. And on this podcast and in general, I think people are realizing how much more important sleep is to our overall health. But haven't heard that be said enough. I think the people we surround ourselves with and how important that is. And I know together you found each other and those same passions and support one another. And I love everything you're doing. It's been an absolute treat to talk to you again and pick your brains and share all these amazing health hacks. And do you know what? I think we need to change the name of this podcast to the Health Optimization Podcast with the information you've given me about what hack it actually means. So I'm pitching that to the boss, Health Optimization Podcast.
You've got two enthusiastic thumbs up from over here.
Where can we find more about you individually and the businesses? Where can people go?
I feel like social media, Instagram is probably a good way, you know, for both of us individually, at Jana Breslin, at Evan DeMarco, yeah. Complete Human. You can find all of our articles and blogs, and we have a podcast as well, at completehuman.com, and then regenerativepastures.com is our new baby.
Yeah, it's our new baby. And one thing we didn't even get to talk about is the cryo tub, but if you're on completehuman.com, yep. You can see our cryotherapy tub. And when we really talk about mental metabolic health, there's probably one of the greatest things that you can do is get cold. And that's a whole other podcast. That's a whole series of podcasts, but check out some fascinating information. We've been actively participating in some research, and we've got these amazing things that you can add to your bio-optimization journey, which basically it's not comfortable, but damn, does it work.
Yeah, yeah, it's metabolic health and mental fortitude. That's what it helps with.
All wrapped into one.
Yes.
That's a good example of things not always being pleasant. Being cold is very uncomfortable, but I've done it for years as well. The cold immersion and the cryotherapy, and I love it. So I'm a big fan.
There's a great picture of the three of us, like in the cryotherapy. And I remember she got in, I got in, and then you got in like a champ. Like, I'm like, no issues whatsoever. Like, you just got in. It was a Sunday stroll for you. And I'm like, I'm freezing my cojones off.
No, there's an amazing picture of the three of us. I think we're all high-fiving, right?
At yes, the end
of
that's the ice bath.
That's such a, we have to put that in here or something.
That was a brilliant photo. And do you know what? I'd done ice baths years and years ago, and that was the first time for years. And I remember, I think I got in so confidently because my memories were that it was quite easy. And then I just had to keep face. So it certainly didn't feel that way. But yeah.
No. Laird kept saying, take your sunglasses off. I'm like, no, I don't want people to see me crying.
Longest 3 minutes of my life, or however long it was, 2.5 minutes, but a lot of fun. Guys, brilliant to chat to you. Thank you so much for your time, and go check out Jana and Evan and all the wonderful things they're doing.
Thank you, Caroline.
Thank you, Caroline. Great to see you again.
And thank you for listening to the Health Hack Podcast with myself, Caroline Pierce. Each episode provides a healthy dose of health hacking, so make sure to hit subscribe or follow so you don't miss out. I would be truly grateful if you could rate and review wherever you're listening to help others seeking inspiring stories and health hacks to find us. The Health Hack is an Insanity Podcast production and powered by Lumen. See you next time.